Hello again, and welcome to Radio Free HPC. This is where we talk about supercomputing, high-performance computing, and other technology topics. I'm your Toastmaster, Rich Bruckner from Inside HPC, with my co-hosts, Dan Olds from Gabriel Consulting, and Henry Newman from Instrumental. Now let's get to the show.
All right, welcome back. I'm here with Dan Olds, as always, and Henry Newman. We're coming fresh off SC13 in Denver. Welcome back, guys.
And Dan Olds, as always, isn't my full name. It's just Dan Olds. But hey, how you guys doing? Good to see you guys back. Got back safe and sound.
Yeah.
I'm safe.
Safe.
Don't know about sound. My feet hurt. I've decided next year I'm going to have my wife beat my feet for a month in advance to get ready for supercomputing.
You know, if you were in London, you'd have to pay good money for that.
Yeah.
Probably.
With a bamboo.
So, Rich, what do you think? What's new? What's old?
Oh, good job with the pleasantries, Henry. Just jump into it.
We're going to jump right in. What's new, I think, is low-power computing. It isn't here, but, man, there was just a lot of stuff on the floor to see. Things like ARM. People are looking at how to get processing done for less energy, and they were showing initial projects to that effect.
Yeah, there was a lot of that, Rich. It's going to be interesting to see if it can come to fruition, because I think there's a huge number of challenges, especially in the ARM area, to get that working at the scales we're talking about even today, much less tomorrow.
Well, at the scales, but also it's something approaching reasonable efficiency too. In order to get you can, it gets back to the old saw about pulling wagons with gangs of chickens versus using
that was Seymour Cray, Dan, just so you know.
Yes, but this time we're talking about energy. You can go with these extremely low power processors, but what kind of work are you getting out of them, and how far out do you have to wind your network in order to get them all connected?
And do your low power processors get eaten up by your complex and high power network?
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot more communications got to be flying around.
Well, okay. So Dan, I mean, I recognize the shortcomings of the ARM, but what I did see at SC was other low power chips that are addressing these problems, or at least that they're looking at, including Freescale, which has a telco processor that they built a Beowulf cluster out of. It was running a very small instance of Linux. It was very exciting over in the Emerging Technologies booth. And also over at TI, where they're using DSPs, the digital signal processing chips from their space, to do the same kind of Beowulf cluster in a product from Encore called the Brown Dwarf supercomputer.
Yeah, on both those machines, what was the interconnect?
I think it was 10 gig Ethernet. But I'd have to look at the notes. So,
okay.
I mean, they're not running big. They're basically showing proof of concept, Henry. I mean, it wasn't like they were running massive top 500 kind of workloads. They're showing what's possible, how much data can be moved through the system. And the good news is with these telco chips is that's what they're made for, is moving data very quickly. They're also very robust. These devices are meant to set and forget, right? They live in switches on top of cell towers.
Right, but here's the thing. Are they more robust than the equivalent amount of processing in terms of Intel or IBM or somebody else? So let's say you need 30 or 40 chips to make up a system. What's the bell core number for those 30, 40 chips versus one Intel when you add all the memory and everything else?
Well, that's the big unknown.
Yeah. But this in particular, the Freescale device is supposedly has almost near Sandy Bridge performance, and it's very good at things like decryption, right, where ARM processors just fall flat.
How could it have, you're saying, near Sandy Bridge performance on compute or on I.O.?
Or on what? On what compute?
Yeah,
I mean, is it 40 point? Is it memory bandwidth? I mean,
defend it, Rich. This is now up to you. You are now taking on the role of having to defend their entire technology stack.
This is a 64-bit chip that'll go toe-to-toe with the Intel on certain workloads. I don't have that in front of me because I didn't get any paper from these guys. So it was a proof of concept.
The other thing in the emerging technologies I thought was interesting was the carbon nanotube computer and carbon nanotube memory.
Oh, they have something over there?
Yes, they did.
Oh, very cool.
No, I just make stuff up as I go.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I assume that everybody does what I do. Okay, you then.
No.
So I didn't get to see that, but I did see that they had the Parallelo board there, which is the $99 little card from Adaptiva with all the hooks to build clusters out of. I was very excited. This was a successful Kickstarter project that raised, $900,000 or something ridiculous to develop this board, and they're first starting to ship those.
Low.
Well, that's what it took to they surpassed their goal by a long shot.
That's a pretty good price performer for that project then.
Yeah, but it shows there's a lot of interest in this device, and especially for teaching purposes and parallel programming. Unlike the Raspberry Pi, which has a gig Ethernet on board, this has hooks into the memory channel, some kind of Kupi thing, but these boards can talk to each other on a relatively high bandwidth level for building clusters. So,
really?
Very excited. Yeah.
Sounds like a company AMD bought a few years ago, doesn't it, Rich?
Well, are we talking about C-Micro?
We are.
Okay. A guy came up to me, a good friend of mine. He's showing. He did some benchmarks. That device actually can do scaling very well, according to what he was telling me, and it might be great for some HPC applications. AMD just hasn't marketed it that way.
You mean C-Micro?
C-Micro. Yeah, but it sounded like what C-Micro. It sounds what Rich was talking about was what C-Micro was going to be.
Yeah.
So,
and C-Micro had already been at least somewhat pitched towards HPC.
Absolutely. I saw them
3 years ago, 2 years ago for the first time there.
Yeah, it's been longer than that, Dan.
They've been around a while.
I think in New Orleans.
Yeah, they were definitely in New Orleans. I was thinking I saw them in Portland.
Yeah, I might have seen them. So, Rich, any question for you?
Yeah.
You looked at all the big players. Anything new and interesting from the big players?
It was all iterative. You know, there was nothing groundbreaking. NVIDIA had, their new Kepler thing is kind of interesting. And what they did on the personnel side was actually more interesting to me. They hired Steve Oberlin from Cray as their CTO for Tesla. So he just started last week. And Mark Hamilton as well from Sun. Mark's over there now.
Well, so. From Sun with a stop at HP.
Yeah.
With HP the last few years, and I did not know about Steve Oberlin.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So he was.
Scott goes in. Revolving doors. Scott, Steve Oberlin, and then Oberlin will go to Google, and then who's next?
Well, we could come up with a bunch of names, but some of them are probably retired. So. He certainly knows the MPP space and the vector processing. I think it's a great choice for NVIDIA, and he seemed really jazzed when I talked to him about it.
Good. One of the things that I saw that is in lockstep with what we foretold, and I think primarily Henry foretold, but we discussed recently, file system wars. IBM was talking an awful lot about what they're doing with GPFS and their GPFS storage box that they previewed, at least for the analysts in Salt Lake City. But they talked about it quite a bit more in meetings this time. And I do think that file system wars are in our future here.
It could. I agree.
So it's an appliance that runs GPFS, kind of like a NAS box?
It's an appliance. Actually, they released the appliance to IBM. They also have a version they released with the software to RAID Inc., and it directly competes with people building block kind of what DDN has done NetApp has done with GPFS.
It's kind of interesting, too, in that, at least, now tell me if I'm wrong, Henry, but the way I sort of interpreted it is it's kind of like RAID 60, in that they keep parity for 60 or so drives. So rebuild time.
That's called declustered RAID, Dan.
Yeah, okay.
It's not RAID. It's
well, but they're doing it with 60 drives.
Right, they're doing 60 drive chunks.
Yeah.
It's declustered across 60 drives, so the RAID is virtualized across those 60 drives in groups of, you know, you pick it. I thought it was 8+2 by default.
Could be. The thing I thought was interesting, though, one of the things that I know we've talked about in the past is, and I know Henry's written about, is how, the way he puts it, RAID is dead because of the rebuild times on a 3-4 terabyte drive.
Directly addresses it.
Exactly.
This, and there are a couple vendors that are doing that, directly addressing this. Xyratex has PD RAID. NetApp has their own version. So people are addressing this RAID rebuild issue pretty quickly in the industry. This is not the first or the last.
No. And the thing that's cool about it, though, is that with the way that they're addressing it, you don't need to rebuild anything. What it does is it simply takes that capacity out of use, and you have enough slack capacity, since you're spread out over so many drives, to pretty much take a spindle or several spindles going down and be able to keep operating and do a rebuild when you have the time.
Is this the marketing presentation or the sales presentation, Dan? Because it's a little more complex than that.
It is absolutely more complex than that. But
pretty much everybody can do those kinds of things. You do have to do the rebuild for a variety of reasons, because the reallocation is going to be a problem of the data.
But you have to do the rebuild right then?
Different people have different options of how fast and what you're rebuilding, how much data. But all of these are moving away from what the standard RAID that I have said is going to die or dead. But with 6 terabyte drives that Hitachi Western Digital claims they have, I think this is going to be a requirement, because there's no, yeah.
Well, hell, with a lot of spindles, that's the other thing, is it's the spindle count that's going to kill you, because you're within the mean time between failure if you get enough spindles.
So mean time to failure and the hard error rate.
Something out. And the hard error rate.
You're in a world of hurt.
Well, yeah. I mean, it sounds like the good news is companies like Xyratex, they told me that they can rebuild the RAID in a quarter of the time. So, you know, as these drives do get bigger, you're going to need that capability.
Yeah, and your window's got to get dropped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anything else? Rich, you see anything?
Okay, Henry. So the thing that I thought was interesting actually happened prior to the show at a different conference, the Amazon AWS conference. Cycle Computing did probably the world's largest cloud-based supercomputer. It was globally distributed, but they did an instance of over 152,000 cores. So a serious supercomputer for a very specific job workload that lent itself to that. And this
was
a world.
Job?
It's this. They're doing this materials thing where you're looking for solar panel candidates. So you got to test whether these things will be more efficient at generating electricity from photons, right? And and anyway, in this instance, they ran this job and on this gigantic thing, and they were able to do it much more cost effectively than they could have. Procuring such a large device would have been monumental. So I think the run cost them $32,000 to get this answer.
By what charge? I mean, is this retail price on AWS?
Well, I don't know. I would guess that's they get a special deal, but
I would imagine. Yeah.
I bet you know what? If it was that important a job, they could have gotten money from NSF and run on NCSA too.
Well, maybe so, yeah. Maybe so. But I think what it's showing is that cloud HPC has come a long way, and for a lot of things, utility computing is here, and we've been saying,
Rich,
I don't
Rich,
buy it.
Rich,
I don't told
buy it. Dan,
I would.
You and I are in agreement here because Cloud HPC might work for some applications where you don't have to move a lot of data.
But HPC is mostly moving a lot of data, and even so, let's say you're not moving a lot of data. I think if you're a medium sized, well, and define that, right? But if you're a good sized installation, if you're going to rely on using AWS or some cloud supercomputing, you're going to find that you're going to end up paying probably more than what you would pay if you own the equipment yourself. There's no free lunch. Amazon doesn't get this equipment for free. No one else does either. Well, and somebody's got to pay for that, and someone's got to pay for the slack or potential slack capacity. And if you contract for a whole lot of capacity over a whole long time, you're going to pay for it.
Dan, three guys in this solar lab are not going to be able to buy a top 10 supercomputer.
Just, let me ask
not,
you, Rich. Let
no,
me ask
it's
you
just,
question.
Come on, that's...
Where did three guys... No.
I mean,
I agree with you.
I'm not saying that they are able to buy it.
This is for some R&D thing. This isn't to design the next production Toyota.
Sure, and it's useful for that, but it's for guys doing an R&D thing. It's a short-lived project.
Where did the guys?
It makes
three,
sense.
Where did the three
that.
Guys get enough money to buy that much time, or was they given to it by Amazon?
I don't know the funding source.
Okay.
On this particular.
Interesting.
But for a short-lived project like that, Rich, I think cloud's a good choice.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying utility computing is here. I'm not saying it's going to replace what we do today, but it is certainly a viable option for many things.
It's an option.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for very large-scale things as well, if your job lends itself to that.
Large-scale, short-lived would be my point.
And you don't need to move a lot of data.
And you don't need to move a lot.
Well, it's short-lived because they were able to throw such a large instance at it.
Yes, and they were able to throw a large instance at it, and they had their problem just right the first time, and they didn't have to make any adjustments. That's the thing, is you factor in, you know, real life where you don't have the algorithm exactly right the first time. Just saying that it could be fraught with challenges and problems that we don't necessarily think about, and that they certainly won't allow to happen during a demo. You know what I mean? It's a tougher business model or a tougher economic model than it seems.
Well, I'll give you that, Dan. And I think we should have some folks from this particular project on the show and learn some more. But
that'd be great. Let's get them.
Yeah. So, but on to other, you know, themes of the show. Almost every booth I walked by was talking about big data. And it didn't matter if it was a university, or whatever, and it was just within earshot or look at their signage. Big data was all over the floor, and it is the flavor of the day, maybe. But it wasn't like that last year, and that was a noticeable
change.
It's
a good thing.
I'm really
glad to see that, and I didn't get to see as much of the show, but that's something in my mind that this show has to morph towards. It's natural. It's right. It's a good thing for both the show and for the HPC community.
Yeah, yep. And along both these lines, virtualization was a panel that I hosted at the Dell booth. And it was all guys from various research institutions and virtualization in HPC. And they're using it for production.
Have they solved the latency issue through the virtual path and being able to DMA, all the DMA issues and all the library issues?
Now that InfiniBand is part of the equation, Henry, a lot of them say that they don't have everything they want, but they are well along the way to solving that problem. At least that makes it useful for them, right? There's features they want that they don't quite have yet. But my final question to these guys was, you know, the title of the talk was like, you know, HPC virtualization. We've been talking about it. Will it finally ever happen? And I said, will we even need a talk like this in 5 years? And they said, no. In 2 years, it will be everywhere on the floor here. 2 years.
Really?
That makes sense to me. I'd agree with that.
This is the thing to watch, is HPC virtualization. So there, I put my stake in the ground.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think it has to happen that way. One of the things, actually, getting back to your big data point, Dave Turek from IBM gave a talk to the analysts. They had sort of a NDA meeting, and this part isn't NDA, but the thesis that he started out with that I really agree with is that, you know, we're talking about big data, HPC, and that these are artificial constructs that are really, for the most part, identical. That HPC and big data are the same thing in so many ways as to be undistinguishable.
I'm not buying that. There are certain, I would say there are certain big data problems, yes, but there are many more, no. Walmart's big data problem is not HPC.
But I think that what he's saying, though, is not that they're the same in terms of the code, but in terms of what is needed to do both, that they're the same. And I would agree with that.
I totally disagree.
Well, the trouble you get in with that, Dan, is that these big data folks do not identify with what they do with HPC at all. They simply don't relate to that term. And IDC
is not yet. No,
not yet. Well, IDC has been going back and forth with them. What can we call this unified space? And the term they came up with is high performance data analysis. Okay, and that is a common, because if you say analytics, that's a subset of the analysis.
Well, actually,
I agree with Rich,
that big data is a set of analytics, because really what we're doing is we're analyzing things.
No,
and big data has this. Wait, hold on, Henry, because we have this because this implication we have, big data is so closely aligned with Hadoop and stuff like that, and Hadoop is a subset of what people are doing with data.
And you're looking at a microcosm of the problem, and then we're going to have to wrap this up. But the microcosm is you're looking at the analysis part. There is the collection part. There is the part of big data where you organize it. And then there's the analysis part. And if you don't do the first two steps correctly, the third step becomes a moot point.
I just make other people do that part, Henry.
Right. And that's why I called it myopic. And what my point, and I think I agree with Rich on this, and I love disagreeing with you in general.
Yeah.
But IDC is corrected. It needs a new term. It can't have analytics because the workflow involved in big data, whether you're Walmart collecting point of sale data or you're the National Cancer Institute collecting cancer data, is completely different.
Yep, I'd agree with that.
And you've got to do the collection and organization so you can do the analytics.
Yes.
And those two steps are left out of the analytics part.
That's a good point, and I actually would agree with that. It's what we do in this industry whenever we're trying to nail something down. You have people doing it for their own motives, which are typically commercial.
That's true. So, guys, on that note, I think we've wrapped up HP Supercomputing 13.
You have. I'm still working on hundreds of things.
And we only have 300 and... 54 days till we show up at Supercomputing again or something like that.
Yeah, we'll be back in New Orleans next November. So
I've already got dinner reservations at a couple places because they're going to be tough to get to. I was going to go down early.
Yeah.
And with my wife, and there are no hotel rooms under
already?
$600 a night.
Already?
Already.
What?
Check three different hotel websites. There must be a convention the week before us.
Well, hell, there were two conventions during us last time, and there were still some rooms available.
We'll have have to watch that space because there's a lot of rooms in that town, man.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, hey,
right, guys.
This has been a terrific wrap up, and Dan, I think we got to come circle back here and talk about what happened with Student Cluster, but we just don't have the time today. So,
sure. In the epic Pros versus Joes celebrity cluster off.
Look forward to hearing the details on that, Dan.
Okay, well, we will talk to you guys soon.
that's it for this edition of Radio Free HPC. Thank you for listening, and be sure to check back often for new episodes. Also, check out our website for more content, links, and a place for you to let us know what you think about the show. We're at RadioFreeHPC.com. Thanks again. We'll be back with another exciting episode real soon.